It's a daily reality of life in many communities in our region. People look for places to live and find few options, and the options they do find tend to be high in price. The attractiveness of living in the region drives people in, drives vacancy down, and drives prices up. Many organizations work to get people into affordable homes. Those include Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity, which is no newcomer to the situation. Rogue Valley Habitat celebrates 30 years on the job this year with a steady stream of projects and some new places in which it is building houses. Brandon Toms is the communications director for Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity, and he joins me in the studio. Brandon, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So 30 years in the Valley, I mean, this is a name that everyone knows, Habitat for Humanity, but how does Habitat for Humanity work? What's the basic thrust of what you do?
So our idea is to, or our goal is to remove people from substandard living conditions and place them into a home that's affordable and stable and decent. We certainly don't build Taj Mahals, but we give people a really good start.
And what's the agreement then? I mean, the people for whom homes are built, what do they have to put into it, both in dollars and in sweat equity, and how does that all work out?
So it's a hand up, not a handout. They are required to do 500 hours of sweat equity, so build alongside our group of very skilled volunteers. And then they don't get a free house. We sell the house to them via a 0% 30-year mortgage. That mortgage is only for the cost of building. And their payments typically end up anywhere from $450 to $650 a month, and that's with taxes and insurance. We actually hold the note. So as they pay back their mortgage, that money goes into the coffers, and we get to build more houses.
All right, so it's a continual rolling process that basically the person living in these houses over here are helping pay for the new ones being built over there.
Right. The only downside is that it takes 30 years to pay off a mortgage, and while we're getting ready to break the ground on 60, 61, 62, and 63, we don't ever have enough money in the coffers from the 59 houses that are paying their monthly mortgage payment. So we're always fundraising in order to find the cash we need. It takes about $60,000 in cash just in items that we can't get donated or skilled labor that we have to pay for in order to get those homes completed.
Well, you said skilled labor that you have to pay for. So I mean, what is the usual assemblage of a crew for Habitat for Humanity? Is there a fair amount of volunteer labor involved in addition to the person who will live in the house?
Most of it's volunteer, and we have some great community partners, some professionally skilled volunteers that will come in with special things like roofing. But there are some times, especially now when construction's so busy in the Valley, that it's difficult to get people to be able to donate their time to us. So we'll have to pay for some skilled labor, things that require some permitting, like electrical or plumbing, things of that nature.
How deep is your reservoir of volunteers? I have to believe that over 30 years in the Valley, there's probably a pretty good cadre of people who are ready to go with hammers and saws and all that.
We have an exciting and vast group of volunteers, and they're so robust and so willing to help us at the drop of a hat. Honestly, I think every nonprofit would bang that drum, but we're blessed beyond belief with the amount of volunteer help we have.
So over the course of the building of a house, the things that you mentioned that require permitting, like electrical, plumbing, things like that, with just the basic construction of the house, can you often get one at least framed with all volunteer labor?
Yeah, we sure can. Volunteers will do the framing. This last weekend, we had a wall-raising event for 62 and 63 on Sweet Road in Medford. And we had, that was for Women's Build Week, which is a national Lowe's initiative. Lowe's sponsors through our international organization. We had about 35 women that showed up on Tuesday and Friday to frame walls. And then Saturday, about 120 people came out, and kind of the old barn raising theme came together to raise the wall for two people in need, one from right here in Ashland.
Is that Bill Hahey?
It is Bill Hahey.
I saw the picture in the paper, and Bill has been a guest of ours here in the studio. He's a fine musician.
He's very talented.
He's lived in a house on wheels for a very long time, it sounds like.
It's time for him to get a permanent foundation under his feet.
So walk us through the situation and leave out the stuff that might, you know, be overly sensitive or personal. But I mean, what is the step a person has to go through, the set of steps a person has to go through to become a resident of a Habitat for Humanity house? And in this case, a duplex, isn't it?
Right. So we offer orientations that tell people about our program twice a year, usually one in the spring, which we just finished one up, and then one in the fall. Those two orientations mark the opening of a 30-day application window. All of the information and requirements for our program are found on our website during the downtime, which is roguevalleyhabitat.org. They can they go through that application process. I am supported by two groups of eight people. I have a family services committee in Rogue River and one in Medford that help with the application process, that vet people to find out who they are and what they're all about and make sure they're really ready for home ownership and in need.
All right. So what are some of the determinations about whether somebody's ready for home ownership?
So there's three criteria mainly, and one is a need for housing. So whether they live in a substandard or they're paying more than 50% of their income in rent, which about 3 out of 4 extremely low-income families in Jackson County are paying more than 50% of their income in rent. Or
is that 3 out of 4, you said?
Yeah. Wow. It's pretty abysmal. So those people have a need for housing, and then you must have an ability to pay, because we're one of the 10 largest lenders in the United States. We have to follow the federal guidelines for being sure you can make your payment, even though it's minimal. And you have to follow in some income parameters to prove that you're low income. And then the third is a willingness to partner, which is where the sweat equity comes in.
Brandon Toms is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the communications director at Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity, which is approaching its, if it hasn't already passed, its 30th birthday. You can join the conversation on the exchange about the process of going through what Habitat does, which is putting homes, people into homes at reasonable costs. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the people who help you with the process, so you obviously do more than just a function as communications director. It sounds like you're well into the programming stuff, too.
Yeah, I am. I am the programs director as well. So I wear multiple hats. It's the nonprofit world, but it keeps life exciting and really lets us get in touch with all the many aspects that go on throughout the organization.
So the numbers, there are two sets of numbers that are fairly surprising on a couple of levels. And one of them is what you just mentioned, where about 3 out of 4 families are paying more than half their income, you said?
So 3 out of 4 extremely low income families. It's about 1 out of 4 families in general, in total, that are paying more than 50% of their income. I think the statistic was for every 100 families with extremely low income, there are only 16 affordable rental units in the valley. So the Oregon Housing Alliance does an amazing job of tracking this data for us. The data is a little old. It's 15-16. They haven't released the new stuff yet. And unfortunately, it's probably only gotten worse. We've seen a drastic increase in people being displaced in order for a landlord to be able to increase that rent through a new tenant. And it's caused people some serious issue.
Well, let me underscore that one again. Then you said for every 100 low-income families, there are 16 affordable homes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that's rental units, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. When you get into the statistics about the opportunity for an extremely low-income family to be able to purchase, the number's essentially so close to zero, we shouldn't even try to quantify it because of the housing prices in our valley.
All right. But you mentioned that the monthly payment for somebody who lives in a Habitat house is going to be between $450 and $650.
It's very reasonable.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of house, then, do they get? I mean, you mentioned you're not building Taj Mahal, so what are the usual furnishings or setup and fixtures for a house like
that? So it's typically a 3-bedroom, 1 or 1.5 bath, depending on the size of the family. We've built up to 5 bedrooms before for an extremely large family. The homes for Bill and Jude on Sweet Road are 2-bedroom, 1-bath units. We also have to be sure to protect our investment and make sure it has some resale, so we wouldn't build a 1-bedroom. They're just decent homes. We always make sure that there's room for a family dinner table. That's very important to us. Usually it's a large great room, then that restroom facility and the bedrooms. Depending on the community requirements, we may have to put in a garage or a carport, which typically we've been doing of late.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Bill and Jude. This is Bill Hahey.
Mm-hmm.
And who's Jude?
Jude Forler is a woman who retired, came back to the Valley to retire after some time in Hawaii, thought she was making a sound investment for her future and purchased a manufactured home in a park in Medford. And unfortunately, with her fixed Social Security income, over the last few years, her rent has doubled. So now she's paying about 70% of her income just towards space rent. And her trailer's beginning to fall down around her. So it's a perfect opportunity for us to give her some peace of mind and stability.
And so is how often do you build something like this, though, where you have a duplex going in?
Typically, we try to if we're able. Land is so difficult to come by now and so expensive that the largest amount of people we can house with that precious commodity, we want to make sure we do so while still giving them their independence and making them proud of the home that they're going to be living in.
I guess I hadn't thought about that end of things. It's not just difficult for people to get into homes. It's also difficult for entities like Habitat for Humanity to be able to buy property to build homes.
Sure. If I had an endless budget, we'd be building hundreds of homes every year, but I don't have that luxury.
So instead, you mentioned 62 and 63. Is that represents the duplex that Bill and Jude are in?
Right.
And that's the actual number of structures you've built?
Well, funny you mentioned that. This weekend on Saturday in Rogue River, we're having a groundbreaking. It'll actually be 60 and 61. Things got a little amix with getting plats and stuff approved. But in Rogue River, at 5875 Foothill Boulevard, we'll be having a groundbreaking. We had a wonderful community donation from a lovely woman in Rogue River. We developed, it'll be a 16-unit development by the time we're done. We just finished a $250,000 retrofit for sewage and power and all that good stuff. The infrastructure, the road is in. And this weekend we'll be celebrating with people as we shove some gold shovels into the dirt and get ready to start building.
Always with the gold shovels.
Always with the gold shovels. I have to go back to work and paint them.
Brandon Toms is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Communications and Program Director at Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We have an email here from Mike in Medford who asks, how is working with the Medford City Council on affordable housing? My experience is the majority are oblivious or outright hostile to the area's low-income residents. Thank you for all the work you do.
Thank you. The Medford City Council is doing some things to take some steps in order to help with blight or areas of concern within the community. And we've stepped up to offer our services to be willing to help them with the after part of that. I don't know all the specifics, and I don't want to really get into it without knowing them. But as they take back those homes that may be abandoned and left in dismay.
It's called the receivership program.
Right, yeah. Correct. We have offered ourselves as an avenue to be able to facilitate the rehabilitation of those homes and hopefully be able to facilitate finding some very needy people and deserving people in our community to habit them.
Okay, so I understand the property can be conveyed to nonprofit entities, which I assume Rogue Valley Habitat is.
We've been identified as one of the preferred partners for mm-hmm. the program.
Is there any specific structure already identified as something you'll work on?
They're still going through their code enforcement process and the legalities of how long and the time frame with which that needs to happen. So have we of yet been identified for a single property? Not yet, but I'm sure it's coming in the very near future.
Okay, so not quite to that point yet. And then what kind of a different skill set might that be then? I mean, going from generally building new structures to doing remodeling.
It's not new for us at all. About 6 years ago, right after the downturn of the economy, we identified previously built structures as an opportunity for us to have a little bit of a cost savings, as well as to revitalize a neighborhood that may already be going through some challenging times. So we've done it before, many times, successfully, and old hat for us.
All right. You mentioned, too, the women build. And I know my wife has been involved with a couple of these because she's got some carpentry skills herself and others. So what kinds of – how do these work? So it's just basically women form the entire crew?
Right. Women form the entire crew. And it's nice that your wife has some previous skills, but many of the women that come to us have none in house building and carpentry. The partnership with Lowe's, they give 7 women build classes starting at the end of March, and they teach them the basics. They build a garden shed step by step. They learn how to frame. They learn how to insulate. They learn how to site. They learn how to roof. And then by the time that's done, it all comes to this big culmination during Women's Build Week, and then that's when they go out and build the walls, and we raised them this last Saturday. So it's really exciting, and this year we had an amazing turnout. Some women chose to build. Some women answered the call for fundraising. We had about 50 women that decided they wanted to fundraise for Women Build this year. They raised $15,000 in 2 months. It was absolutely incredible. It's exciting. Women's Build was really exciting this year.
How much bigger, if at all, can you get? I mean, at Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity, if you're talking 30 years and looking at you're working on 62 and 63 right now, it's not a huge cranking out of dozens of houses every year. It's certainly within what you can handle, clearly. But I mean, when you look at the need, is there any way you can see your way to expanding what you do at Habitat?
Sure. It all comes down to finance, unfortunately. We have some wonderful opportunities to partner with great corporations locally that do their best to support us. We have a fundraiser going on right now between Country Insurance, HomeQuest Realty, and Guild Mortgage. They're kind of having an interoffice competition, and that will come to its apex with a build day where they all get to go out and swing some hammers. So we have had amazing support from the local business community, plus our individual donors. People really see the impact that stable home ownership can make on the lives, and not just the lives of the adults that receive the home, but almost even more so on the children themselves. It's fantastic to see the positive outcomes and stories that we hear from people that didn't have to be concerned about where am I going, where am I going to stay, how long am I going to be here, who's my new teacher, do I have to make new friends. It's nice that those children don't have to be concerned with that anymore, and they could just focus on being a kid and growing up and doing great things.
How long a process is it from when people might first put in an application to Habitat to actually moving into a home?
It's typically about a year and a half.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have some curriculum that they go through while they're in the period, teaching them about being a good neighbor and city municipal codes and homeowners insurance and budgeting and credit and just to set them up to make sure that they find the process successful. The process does take building a home takes about 6 to 9 months, depending on the time of year and the weather. So there's some time for them to really wrap their brains around it and be set up for success.
Grab the headphones. We have a call for you. I'm going to take a call here from Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Brandon Toms from Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity.
Yes, good morning. I have a simple question. Do they allow work with on the financial end, letting family members that live out of the area co-sign for the financial responsibility?
Okay, interesting question. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it.
So the answer to that is no, we do not allow anyone to co-sign. The people that are going to be living in the home are the individuals that sign on the mortgage itself. Typically, we don't run into a situation where they need to co-sign because we have to vet them due to federal regulations for an ability to pay. So
what's the relationship then over time? I mean, obviously the relationship is directly between Habitat and the people who own the house, but then if they decide years down the road, they want to move, they want to sell the house. How does that all work?
They certainly can. We do when we sell the home to the recipient, we give them a mortgage for the cost to build. And then in order to protect everyone's interest and the equity in the home, there's a silent second that's placed on the difference between the cost to build and the appraised value of the property.
Silent second mortgage.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's so they can't go and tap out on the equity, get themselves in a real pinch. We've determined what they're eligible to pay and a comfortable payment for them. And as they spend time in home ownership, it's called a depreciating interest. It's the amount of the amount of that second slowly goes down in increments depending on how long they're in the home. And then once they pay the home off, that's completely forgiven.
Okay. So a bit of is there a pretty good stack of paperwork for people to sign when they get into the Habitat?
You know, it's nowhere near as intimidating getting something out on the open market through a financial institution, but
and you can say this with some authority because you used to work in the banking business.
I did for 13 years. We spend a whole class going over the mortgage documents because we want to make sure people really understand how it works.
And back to one of the original figures you mentioned, the 500 hours of sweat equity. This is no mean feat. We're talking 50 hours a week for 10 weeks or 10 hours a week for 50 weeks. So you could put in a few nights a week for most of a year working on the house to be able to get it ready. So this is not an insignificant amount of time.
No, they really have a vested interest and it promotes pride of ownership with these people. They're beaming when they finally receive the home, not only because they know what an opportunity they've been given, but because they really played a huge part in it. So I think it's a a very important aspect of the program.
So the Rogue River thing, is this your first foray into that part of the valley, into Rogue River?
It is our first foray into Rogue River, and we've had a wonderful response of applicants, and we've got some wonderful volunteers on board. Again, back to just a little bit more fundraising to do, but we're excited to break that ground and get moving. And 16 units is going to be our biggest development to date. And
that was the next
exciting question.
These are all going to be, all 16 are going to be habitat units then.
Yeah, hopefully. Lord willing, we're able to raise that cash and get the process rolling.
Mm-hmm. And what's the timeline on it then? I mean, obviously the first two you've already planning on breaking ground for this weekend, but then after that, how long you think it might take?
I couldn't tell you.
It's all based on fundraising.
It is, unfortunately. If somebody wanted to write $1 million check, we could probably wrap it up in the next year or two.
How much does it? What's the actual cost then? For I mean, just in dollars, would you have to spend to get land acquired, permits, and then the people who have to do the permitted work?
Nowadays, it's typically about $40,000 to $50,000 per lot, and that does take into account whether we can do a zero lot line or duplex, as you referenced earlier, and then about $60,000 in cash, plus about $30,000 to $40,000 in donated materials or contracted labor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so always a need for money, and is there always a need for volunteers? It sounds like you have a pretty good number.
No, we can always use more. And the nice thing about our program is we have some very talented, patient, and really wonderful volunteers that are willing to teach somebody new skills if they're not comfortable swinging a hammer or using a chop saw or nail guns. They love nail guns on the job site. Always using our safety equipment, though. So we always are looking for volunteers. Currently, we have volunteer orientations every Wednesday at 4 o'clock down at our office, 2201 South Pacific Highway in Medford, right next to the Restore. And it's a great opportunity for people to get involved.
And the Restore is a whole other story. But
wow.
You the old building materials sold again through the Habitat Restore.
Right. And we've almost turned into a nursery. We had another wonderful donation from Costco a couple days ago. So there's geraniums and impatience and petunia, whatever you want. It's probably there. I know even some tomato plants.
Always something happening at Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity. That's where Brandon Toms is the communications director and the program director. Thanks for joining us with an update on what you're doing, and happy anniversary.
Yes, thank you so much.